In our first hour, we talked with Captain Max Hardburger about his life battling scoundrels and pirates and being a high seas repo man, taking ships back to their rightful owners. It was fun. House to House is a soldier's memoir. David Bellavia is the author, former staff sergeant, multiple award-winning soldier, and this book is terrific. It's a great read. If you haven't, beginning to end, it's just, once you get going on this, you'll feel like you're the one in camouflage fighting for your life, even as you're working through house to house, door to door in Fallujah. And we'll get back to this conversation, too, that we were just having just before the top of the hour about the warrior class, the perceptions of the warrior class in this country, and warranted or not, just where we stand with these soldiers. Next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. So, David, you patiently waited there, so we took it up to the top of the hour, talking about the perceptions of those that don't go to war and whether or not we even get as much of an opinion about what's happening, or as citizens, whether the warrior class is imbued with sort of special rights. And I'm really not trying to put too fine a point on it. Everybody I know who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, I would be honored to be
absolutely
friends
and
with
I would hate for someone to join the show and hear this as if you were, or if I was making a comment that you or have a snobbery or vice versa. But what you bring a very valid point, and what it reminds me of is what's happening in West Virginia right now. We've got a horrible tragedy in an industry in mining. Very tough, rugged people, very misunderstood what they do, very dangerous job. And yet everyone in the nation over their English muffin, you know, this morning is talking about, you know, they should have done this, or this mine was wrong, or, you know, this, why would someone with an education go into a coal mine? After you hear that for the 50th time, you start to think, you know what, we do this to heat your home. Shut up. Leave me alone. Stop talking about what I'm doing, you know? And that over a period of, I think, three generations is how that alligator skin and bad attitude, you know, that I think that's where that comes from. Now, I'm a part of that. And I can tell you right now that, yeah, my eyes glaze over when I hear, you know, people making, you know, casting aspersions on the character of someone in the field that does something horrible. And honestly, I still represent the same uniform for those despicable people that performed what happened in Abu Ghraib. So, you know, sometimes you have no defense. In this case, you know, Ian, if you go on YouTube right now and you typed in helicopter attacks in Iraq, you're going to get 10 videos of the same thing that happened here. I don't necessarily think that the Army wanted to release it, not because they're trying to cover up anything. I think that they...
Well, they were trying to cover it up.
What I'm saying is, I don't think that this is a grand cabal
no.
to cover up one instance. I think this is just like you're not going to see a video of the IED that
right.
set off and killed five people at their.
Well,
I mean, there are.
But you hit on something again. I just want to jump in because I think sometimes, and maybe I see this in House to House, and again. I cannot compliment you enough on how well you wrote it, and I think it's a very honest, a very interesting portrayal. But there are certain, every so once in a while, and maybe it's because I've served as a chaplain's intern many times, so I see sometimes what you talk about when you talk about the chaplain in the book and how you respond to that and why sometimes you put up an extra wall around that chaplain because you just can't think like that. You know, he's going to say something that's going to put you in a place and you cannot be there because you have a job to do and you can't be too reflective while you do it, lest you do it not as well. And I think that's a totally fair point. But let me just say, looking at what you wrote, I think there are times when it seems like there's a certain type of person who's attracted to this type of work anyway. It's volunteer, obviously. You sign up for it. And then there's a certain type of person who can survive it. It's not the kind of citizen soldier that it was, say, as you make the point about World War II, where everybody was in, you know, was in it.
Right.
And there's a certain type of person who's attracted to it. There's a certain personality type that's attracted to it. And I think that's part of the pushback on this, is that cavalierness about death that sounds like it goes too far for our own good, too far to justify the comments, the offhandedness about death or about shooting somebody who's unarmed. You know what I mean? I think there's just, that's where it goes, and it's like, ooh, maybe we don't want as much of that.
You know, but I think that just to add to your point, I don't think that that happens in combat. I don't think that personality is drawn to the military per se, because I think everyone has different reasons for joining. What I found odd is that the most leftist liberal and the most right wing conservative all come to the same conclusion while they're being shot at. And it's true. They might leave the military and say, what was I thinking? And the other guy might say, that was awesome, I want to do it again. But while they're in the zone, while they're in the moment, they all have the same rationale, because that's the only thing that'll keep you sane. And so what we just saw is a window into a guy's, you know, into the moment where he's shooting someone. And he obviously knows he's being recorded. Did he ever think that this was going to be on CNN? Who knows? But the point of the matter is, we're judging him on one moment. And I'm sure if we sat him down and had a cup of coffee, he's going to tell you, like I'm telling you, that that's a cringe. That's not who he is. And it was just something that we said.
I think we'd all like to hear him say that. You know, it's really interesting. It's a really good point. But I also think, and then I'll get to the callers, that there's a difference between judging somebody's actions and judging their soul. And so I don't want to get that confused, because I think that's happened a couple of times where it's like, if you judge what they did, you're judging who they are. And I don't know that's consistent in the way in which people have been pushing back against this. And if you want to see it again, you can link up to it at coasttocoastam.com. It's the WikiLeaks story we're talking about, that we can separate out, you know, oh, that person went too far, that person shouldn't have said that, and not have to go down the road of, that's a bad, 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 bad person.
You know, and I'm glad you said that, because I think there's really two issues here, and the issue I had with WikiLeaks is that they kind of grade this whole area. The two issues are, is this criminal, which is what WikiLeaks is saying it is. They're calling it murder, and they're saying it's criminal. Or is this, you know, insensitive, inhumane, whatever you want to call it. Is it deplorable? I don't think anyone is going to tell you that they're high-fiving and saying this is awesome. We can make, you know, we can look at this from the standpoint of, this is, you know, this is sick, or I don't like this, or I think they did nothing wrong. But let's get away from the argument that this is criminal, because it clearly is not criminal.
Okay. Your comments, though, and I think this is a fair point, the comments that you make is that this is not criminal, it's distasteful.
It is.
And you use that word, and I thought that was fair, except to say, is there nothing in between murder and distasteful? Are those really our only two options in judging what happened in the lighting up of these guys that turned out to be two photographers from Reuters? Is there really nothing in between just distasteful and murder?
Well, I'd say I didn't come up with the murder.
But that was WikiLeaks. That was WikiLeaks. And
yeah,
you said,
I'm saying that it's not, that this is not a criminal act, period. And let me tell you, this military is really, really trigger happy on throwing guys under the bus and putting them in jail.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah, I mean, trust me, the Fort Leavenworth is full of a lot more gray areas than what you just saw in Baghdad in 2007. So that taken into consideration. But as far as, it's unsettling to listen to and to watch. Absolutely. And then your heart, you know, goes in your throat when you hear about a child being hurt. Absolutely. But I don't know. Maybe my brain isn't wired that way.
Nope. I think that's all good. We'll pick up the phone where Tim is in Edwardsville, Illinois, for David Bellavia, House to House, A Soldier's Memoir. Tim?
Yes, it is. Thank you for taking my call. I'll just carry on with your conversation. No, it's not criminal in the sense that it's is or is not criminal for the soldiers involved, but at a higher level, I think it is criminal when you involve the lies, the ways that we were talked into the war, lied into the war, however you want to put it, by the neocons. And there's no sense in naming names. We all know who it is. But I think that was criminal, and I'm very disappointed. And I'm a Barack Obama supporter, and I'm very disappointed that that was never, and it looks like will never be, investigated to any extent whatsoever.
David, let's give David a chance to respond to that. David?
No, I mean, that's the, you know, a lot of Americans agree with you, sir. And I'm just glad that we're on the same boat, that these individuals, you know, shouldn't be, their families shouldn't have to hear them being called murderers, and they don't have to worry about going to jail anytime soon. If you want to take this up higher, you know, have at it. I just care about the guys that I served with and the guys that are, you know, those helicopters saved. There's a whole lot of boys running around with dads because of those helicopter pilots. And I'm just glad that we're not, you know, throwing them under the bus and saying they're murderers. So I'll take it.
Joe, west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast for David Bellavia.
Evening, Sergeant. How you doing tonight?
Doing great. How you doing, sir?
Oh, not too bad. I'm prior service. I'm medically discharged because I had a heart condition pop up. I've never seen combat, but I worked with a MAD battalion, mobilization and deployment, for anybody that doesn't know MAD. And one of the best parts about that job was I helped train not only American soldiers and sailors going over to be boots on ground, but also Canadians, and even some Germans came to us. So I got to see a little bit of all the types of training. And what you guys were talking about with that helicopter video, it just, everybody I talked to, no matter what country they're from, has said the same thing about things like that. The media gets days, months, years to review our footage, our comments. As soldiers, we have a split second to make a decision based on what we interpret in that situation. And I think if anybody were to take a look at that video and review it, they will never come to the same conclusion those chopper pilots came with, because they had to make a split-second decision on the input that they were given.
Well, that's a fair point. I think we're all colored also, though. Our lenses are ground along our points of view. So, yes, I think you're right, and I'd like to think that they would regret some of those comments. But let's just make the point, too, David, that this WikiLeaks, I mean, like a lot of things, we're not talking about the media processing the story for us. It's really the other way around. The media followed after our website. Websites have democratized all of this reporting on the left or the right.
Well, no, I mean, the original story that you could read from any, you know, outlet, from the New York Times to wherever, they didn't even talk about how these civilians were killed. And almost if you read the story, it would imply that they were, as a matter of fact, it says, I believe the New York Times, I'll have to Google and check it out, but one of the major newspapers says that they're not sure if they were killed in the crossfire or, you know, how they were killed. But you're right, the media didn't, you know, run this thing. It was WikiLeaks. But again, I just don't think that in, you know, we are trained in the whole mindset of we see the cop video only when the police officer oversteps his bounds and chokes a guy or beats him, you know, and when we see that, we're like, this is outrage, this is horrible. And so when you see a video of an engagement, automatically you're looking for something that's outrageous. And I just think that this was a perfect example of something that's unsettling, that's going to make, you know, middle Americans and soccer moms say, oh, my God, are our boys doing this on a daily basis?
And you're right about that. But I think that's why the Army has to release 10,000 of these. Not fight to keep the one back.
Though? Do you really want that? Because I'm going to tell you something. What I'm about, and this is, I've long said this, is every time we kill someone in Iraq, I want to see him. I want to hear where he's from in the world. I want to know why we killed him. I'm all about that. And I'm telling you, if you show these IED videos, and if you showed these videos of what the enemy does in marketplaces, how they use, you know, mentally disabled Down syndrome girls to
blow themselves up at pet markets, I think we'd all be a nation that is afraid to turn our news on. I mean, I'm serious. I don't think the population...
Or guess what? They might start turning their news back on. People have stopped watching the news in record numbers. And I think in a way, they might actually start to re-engage in this story. I mean, it goes back to, remember when the whole thing about how you're un-American if you wanted to see a casket with a flag draped on it, that it was verboten and you were shamed if you said, hey, I think it's okay to show the caskets coming back from the Middle East. Well, now they take pictures of caskets all the time. The world didn't fall apart.
But that, again, you know, what that came down to, though, is that that issue was primarily about, does the family have the right to have their son or daughter used for any sort of purpose, political, to make a moment, to make a point? The family should have the say. I mean, that's really what that debate was.
But this was a new debate because it had never been that way in any war coverage ever before. And so suddenly it became the debate when really, why? You know,
no one could actually prove who is in the casket. I always make that argument.
And so World War II, you know, Korea, Vietnam, that wasn't the argument. And it suddenly became this elevated thing. And I think this is...
Let's be fair, though, about World War II. The only time you saw a World War II veteran bleed was when Spielberg showed it to you. I mean, do you remember? We didn't see Ernie Pyle's body until 2003.
Right. No,
was kept under the wraps. We didn't see Americans floating in the waters of Guadalcanal.
Oh, yes, you did. Yes, you did. And here, actually, I would disagree with you there. Let me make the point. You didn't see many faces, but they did show film. And the films that were taken, you know, whether it's of Hiroshima or whether it's of, you know, these attacks, they may have been edited. They were definitely, that was true. But you pick up an average newspaper from 1955 and there was a mobster that got whacked at a, you know, face down in his ZD at a restaurant. They showed it on the front page. They showed the blood dripping on the floor, the whole bit. We don't do that now. It didn't take it out of the war. We have the most sanitized news. We just do on everything. They used to show a car crash with bodies hanging out of windows, top of the fold in the local newspaper. You never see that anymore.
I'm not sure, though. We just had a pretty good debate over a Marine that was killed with an RPG in Afghanistan. They basically showed him while he was still alive. He died moments later. I don't think that ever would have been a debate in World War II. I don't think you ever would have been able to identify a face of a young man who died. I mean, yeah, things change and things are the same, and I totally agree with where you're going with this. I'm just saying that in World War II, you had a nation that was vested in a war. And when a casualty notification team came down the road, every mother in the neighborhood fell to her knees because they didn't know where it was going to stop.
Right.
And today, it's not the case. We're not vested.
You're right. But there's one of the reasons why we're not invested. I go back to show what's happening. Let us see it. Let us stop getting the press release version of it. Because what it ends up happening is we get the stories about like the attack on that family that was celebrating the birth of a child. And the stories that we hear about originally the Army said, no, we didn't do any of that. And then they go, well, I guess we did. And now they're saying, but trust us, nobody there dug the bullets out of the body and out of the wall. That part didn't happen. Well, by the time they get to that part of the story, we're less inclined to believe them. I mean, there's a certain part where you feel like you're just getting managed all the time on this. And I think that's where we could invest in it if we didn't feel like we were being manipulated. Show us the whole prospectus. Let us understand the good and the bad. And then don't babyfy us enough. Let us treat us like we could actually make an intelligent decision. I hope we would continue to support the troops and know better more about what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. You want to know what's happening? Read the book, House to House, A Soldier's Memoir, David Bellavia. All right, so everybody else is hanging on. Lots of phone calls waiting for him next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, so last half hour here, phone calls for David Bellavia. You should be a fan of this book, House to House, A Soldier's Memoir. You'll learn a lot, and you can't wait for the movie. In fact, you know what? I'll ask him about that. Is there a movie coming up? If not, there should be next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. All right, let's get to Chuck in Florida, who I believe has been waiting the longest to talk with David Bellavia on Coast to Coast. Chuck?
Yes, sir. I am a Desert Storm combat vet. I was a gunner on a Bradley, but one of my observations that I had while I was out was, you know, we have all the Army's really good about their equal opportunity and all this and not being racial and everything. But when you're getting ready to fight an enemy, you have to hate that person almost, because it's not natural to kill somebody. And so the more you talk negative about these people and everything, you get the cowboy up, you know, yeah, got some, get one, you know, all this stuff going on, because any other thing would drive you nuts. And it was after the fact, after all that engagement, I stayed up for the whole 100 hours. And after all that was over was when I started to realize, man, I just took out somebody's dad, somebody's son, somebody's uncle.
Sure.
You know, that's when it hit me. And you know, when you call out the Army, we're not there to police. We're not there to be judged. We're out there to maim, kill, and destroy. That's what we do best.
Well, and I appreciate that, Chuck, and I'm glad you serve your country, and I appreciate that. That last sentence, though, is what kind of throws a hitch in it. You know, we're there to maim, kill, and destroy. That's what we do best. And I guess that isn't our perception of what the modern Army is supposed to only be about. But I thank you for that reflection. And David, I leave it up to you then to follow
up. Well, I mean, in my opinion, I would say that the greatest, you know, I don't think there's a better, you know, human rights organization in the world. We do more good than any other organization in the world in the U.S. military. I mean, we're going to pull you out of an earthquake. We're going to feed you after a tsunami and great. But, you know, as the gentleman said, and God bless his service, you know, you're a combat arms for a reason. That's your job. I don't believe that, and we are a people that pride themselves on winning their wars. I mean, that's part of our DNA. We had the West, you know, and Europe didn't. And we grew up saying, hey, you know, this is our terrain, this is our turf, for right or wrong, not, you know, condoning it, but saying that's what the American, our kids played with guns growing up. I mean, I went to Europe and I was talking to, that's looked at like you're an alien. I mean, that's the American way of life. Now, I don't believe that you send infantrymen to, you know, to Iraq to win hearts and minds. I think the entire mission is odd, to send infantrymen in there with weapons and then complain that they're shooting people. It's hard to control these guys when they're assessing threat. So yes, Chuck is right. When you're going to deploy people, you give them a mission to knock it out, and if you don't want them to shoot people. Honestly, the real problem with this WikiLeaks story is the weapon system they used. If you had a sniper there instead of a helicopter, you don't have this problem. But there wasn't a sniper there. There was a helicopter there. So, you know what I mean?
There was a helicopter a mile away.
Yeah, but I mean, if you had a sniper on the ground, he could have picked those targets out. This isn't even a story.
Right.
But that wasn't there.
I think that's exactly it, though. And I think that's exactly it. It's like, whatever happened to, like, taking prisoners? Whatever happened to,
well,
you know,
that's the problem, though, is that what are we doing with these prisoners? We're taking these prisoners in, and Ian, the biggest problem, going back to Iraq, I talk to these guys on the ground, they say the biggest problem is that they're detaining people, and the military is expecting them to be law and order. They've got to, you know, provide depositions. They've got to find evidence. They've got to take photos of them. And you know, that's not our job. Our job is to detain them and let someone else handle it. And the military is looking to us to convict these guys. So they're back on the street and they're shooting our buddies again. And quite frankly, if the system was better, you wouldn't have so many stories of these guys taking, you know, detainees around the corner and shooting them in the face.
Or if the mission were clearer, that's the other piece to that, too. Let's get to John, first-time caller line, Washington State, for David Bellavia. John?
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Yep.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, first of all, it's a great book. It really is. And I think your conversations tonight are right on. You know, FDR released the tape, the documentary of the Battle of Tarawa. And after he released it to the general public that saw it, the war bonds for the war went through the roof. You know, it really woke people up to the fact that, yeah, we are in a battle. And this is, you know, personally for me, I've never served. But I do talk to, you know, a lot of the buddies that went over there and came back here. And you know, they ask me, they're just like, you know, it almost seems like, it almost seems to me that they think that the general public in America today is just in absolute apathy. And they could, you know, just, they could care less. They don't know what's going on. You know, as long as they're going to Walmart to pick up a chicken, you know, it doesn't really bother them.
Well, John, let's get David a chance to reflect on that. Go ahead, David.
You know, it's hard. I totally agree with that assessment. But, you know, the president said, hey, go shopping. You know what I mean? It wasn't like when the population isn't asked to sacrifice, they're not going to sacrifice. You know, you've heard people talk about a war tax or something to make them, you know, give up some sort of, you know, of comfort so that they could at least commiserate with the men and women that are overseas. You know, but it's from the very beginning, this was about defeating terrorism and not allowing them to take away our way of life. And so we were going to go to the ball game while our kids were over there bleeding. Yeah. And that's kind of how it was set up. Yeah, but no, support, I agree.
Right after 9/11, it was buy a car.
Yeah.
You got to buy a car. I mean, it's like the weird, that is such a unique American response. Jeremy is in South Carolina on Coast to Coast for David Bellavia. Jeremy?
Yes, actually, it's an interesting point. You brought up 9/11. And I wanted to ask about possibly curbing public opinion to go into a foreign sovereign nation and, you know, maybe that we shouldn't have even been there to begin with.
That the right or wrong, it was, you know, Saddam Hussein was their leader, whether we like him or not, and we went into a sovereign country. You know, this whole sovereign country argument comes up a lot, depending on which side of the political fence the president is and whoever the opposition is. Where are you with that, David?
You know, I'm one of those weird guys that believe that the war should be won at all costs, and I was completely against the invasion of Iraq. You know, I don't vote, and it's the same thing with birthers and people that, you know, Obama, you know, because we don't believe he's the president that we shouldn't deploy. That's garbage. I don't care who you voted for. Your president. He sends you to war. If you want to vote, you vote, and whoever wins, you know, you're a soldier. You don't get those choices. I did not want to go to Iraq in 2003. I wanted to fight in Afghanistan, but I was called, and I served my country. That's part of the deal. You know, you take the check, you don't really get a say.
Right.
That being said, none of this is going to bring my friends back, and so when I hear people talk about the war was unjust, you know, I mean, look, there are a lot of families that are mourning their sons and daughters, and that's probably the last thing they want to hear. But if you want to have that debate all day, great. But unless you have a DeLorean that goes back in time, what's the point? I mean, let's not repeat mistakes. Let's talk about this for the next war. I just don't see the point of talking about why we got into Iraq. Let's talk about when we go into Iran or when we go into Pakistan or when we go into anywhere else.
Yeah.
Let's have those debates then.
James is in Leavenworth on Coast to Coast for David Bellavia. James?
Yeah, David, thanks for serving. I'm former Navy myself and a police officer, and I just wanted your thoughts on this. Listening to the video, you know, it seems like from some of the comments I've read, people think they're joking and enjoying it. And I know in my line of work, you have a professional detachment. And we might say things that are funny or off color that other people would be horrified at because of some of the things we see. Do you agree maybe that's what they were doing when they were saying what they were saying?
Yeah, I mean, James, first of all, thank you for your service and what you do. The perfect metaphor is, you know, you're a police officer. You know when you're on Cops. There's a camera there, and you know what you're saying is going to be on film. If I just took a random camera on you on a daily basis, I'm probably going to get some you know, moments that you're going to cringe at. I think, you know, again, I don't know what's in their minds. I don't know what's in their hearts. But I can tell you from my own – I have said some horrible things that I would not want my children to hear when I was in a firefight. I have celebrated the death of my enemy. I've high-fived after shooting people. I've done that. I would never, ever, I would bury my head in the sand if people saw, you know, a video of me doing that. It was in the moment I did it, and, you know, but you know what I'm saying? It's, I feel for these guys. I agree that this was something that they, you know, that I'm sure they're not going to, you know, come back and tell the story at the shopping mall. Yeah, I do agree that professionals can separate themselves in the moment. I do.
But I think there's a difference, too, and I think there's a difference between professional detachment and the gallows humor. And I think that what people respond to is, yeah, to be professionally detached is one thing, but to talk about the to almost be making light of the fact that someone is about to be eliminated from the planet and they're unarmed and they're crawling. And it just starts to feel, you know what, this sounds awful, but it starts to sound a little My Lai, right? Like the My Lai massacre at Vietnam. It has just that, it just starts to get a little of that tint of like, it's one thing to go into a village and everybody's spooked out and nobody knows who the enemy is. It was another thing to be making sport of shooting babies in the trenches, you know?
Yeah, okay. But no, I mean, I totally see the 6 degrees of separation, but I mean, yeah, and that's, I think that's.
It's just the direction where that heads. I'm not saying
okay, down
I'm not
the road,
comparing.
Down the road in that it's mindset, dark, you're absolutely right.
It takes that step down that road that says, wait a second.
It's the first domino, but I think we're not
even. It's just the first domino.
Right, we're nowhere near that in this circumstance. But again, it's a general. When people start talking about rules of engagement and they talk about are you able to do this and do that, it all hinges on the fact that if these guys were shot at first, was there a weapon? You know, and now we're playing Hamlet, and people died, and we're coming back and we're finding things out. To me, it's one of those things that, you know, once you've eliminated the fact that let's all agree that it was embarrassing and it was horrible for people to see it, and the Army needs to be more transparent. It's not criminal. Stop saying it's murder. And unfortunately, tankers and gunners are going to talk like that.
Yeah, you know? But to go back to your point about Abu Ghraib, just what would have happened if they had been challenged earlier up that road before they took the photographs, before they were drawing on bodies, you know, before they were doing the full humiliation and passing the photos around? What would have happened if somebody had stepped in and challenged them and said, hey, you're going down a bad road here?
Like General Karpinski, who, you know, I mean, let's be totally frank. In this same prison cell that all these horrible things are happening, the platoon sergeant impregnates one of his soldiers. They're doing drugs and drinking alcohol. This is not just a breakdown of the Geneva Conventions. This is a breakdown of all
command.
Of the Army regulations. So you're absolutely right. It took one person to show up at that prison and say, what is going on, for this thing to have stopped. And I would like to mention that the whistleblower of Abu Ghraib was not the media. It was the Army. It was a kid who said, this is wrong, and he's the one who blew the whistle on it.
That's the same story with My Lai.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a whistleblower with somebody in the Army who witnessed it, who took the photos and said, this is wrong. Hey, let's go to Victoria in Portland, Oregon, on Coast to Coast, wildcard line for David Bellavia. Go ahead, Victoria.
Oh, hi, David, and thank you so much for serving.
Thank you.
I'm a psychiatric nurse, and we have soldiers coming in from Fort Hood and from Afghanistan and Iraq. And the guys on our unit that come back, or they're all pretty cavalier in attitude. I mean, everything's fine. You know, we're watching TV, we're joking around. But every once in a while, it's that one soldier that needs to stop and ask me to, if I could join him, go down the hall, sit down in his room. And that's when, you know, he can break and he can cry. I'll never forget one soldier who was in a firefight, and in that firefight were kids that were the same age as his own. And I don't see any attitude of any of him being cavalier in the least when he has that moment, you know, when he can feel all the shame and confusion and anger. But because he's a soldier, he's with his buddies, he cannot let him say, wow, I really, you know, we really screwed up, or we're a bunch of jerks. You just can't do that. It's like being in a football game. You know, you're on a team and you cannot stop and say, man, I'm really sorry that I hurt that guy. You know, it takes a while. It's going to take a long time for some of these guys to come back and say, yeah, that probably wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, that's wow. I mean, that's, first of all, thank you for what you're doing. I mean, that's really important stuff. And I mean, I don't know what to add to that. I mean, that's, you know, it's peer related, it's peer pressure, and you don't want to be the first guy that shows any sort of, you know, weakness. And you know, I remember being, I came out of the Army. I went back to Iraq as a reporter, and I was hanging out in an OR. These doctors, civilian doctors, were amputating limbs just left and right. And the way they were reacting about, you know, just a big bin of arms and legs and just carrying it out like it was nothing, they were saying that every one of them are going to be affected when they come back. It's not just the soldier, you know. And the other thing is, it's the family members too. I mean, kids are, you know, why is dad so sharp? Why is he screaming all the time? Why is he upset? There's a lot more people that are affected than just the individual on the ground that goes through it. So yeah, I mean, it's a, and I don't think we even know, the military is just throwing drugs at these kids too.
Yeah.
We're hearing more and more stories about Prozac and all these other antidepressants and psychotics that are being given, some of them in the field. You know, is that a good thing? Is Pfizer going to, you know, support our next war? I mean, what do we necessarily want to do this? Are we just medicating kids for the sake of it? You know, there's a lot of questions we have to ask. There's a whole lot facing these guys down the road.
Well, and I want to go back to the piece I read before from House to House, A Soldier's Memoir, and I'll throw a semi-rhetorical question at you. Combat distilled to its purest form is a test of manhood. Who is the better soldier? Who is the better man? And I wonder whether then what we're hearing, like from that psychiatric nurse or from anybody else who's been through it, is it really a test of who's the better man or who's the better avatar of the man? That the true man, the true person, is the whole person that eventually has to process all of that. But the true whole person can't be out there on that battlefield, or they never would be able to do it. So they create an avatar of themselves that goes through it. What do you think of that, David?
Well, I mean, whatever's out there, whatever, you know, it takes an incredible amount of intestinal fortitude to deliver yourself and subordinates through that. And so whatever is distilled down to make that thing push across, if it's an avatar, God, man, I'm just so glad to be home and with these my kids. I don't care what I had to do to be home, but I'm home. And so I don't ever want anyone to go through that. But if they have to, you know, I think it's going to make you appreciate your life so much more.
Well, the book does it in of itself. If you want a real glimpse into it, House to House, David Bellavia, I knew you would be a great guest. Thank you so much for living up to that expectation.
Thank you, sir.
Deus Tamat. And I do too.